The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here, both myself and my co-host. We are both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And whether you have advisors you're working with today or you do things on your own, whatever the case may be, we would like for you to consider us another resource. And we are here every week. Of course, we've been on KFBK in Sacramento for nearly 20 years, and we are now on KGO in the Bay Area on Saturday afternoon.
So if you're a first-time listener, welcome.
Yeah, and we don't have any sort of bell or anything if you call the first time. But if
we have none of that.
None of that. Although I do remember, Pat, years ago we had a, and this is a financial program, we had a, we said we're going to give away an oven mitt. You remember that?
Yeah.
We thought it was
just for fun.
We were just being silly. The first four callers gets an oven mitt. And
the phone's lit up.
Like, what's an oven mitt? So you're not going to get an oven mitt if you're a listener.
Actually, and the hope is that you'll get good advice that's pertinent to your situation.
Yes.
And so if you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON, H-A-N-S-O-N, 888.
The number two.
Hanson. And we'll answer your investment questions, tax, insurance, financial planning, retirement.
Yeah, we're certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We've both been doing this stuff for 20-some-odd years, and we've
firm
seen it all.
Thousands of clients.
We haven't seen it.
We've seen a lot. About once a year, I get surprised by something new.
That's fair enough. Everyone's like, wow, that is really an interesting thing.
Every once in a while, you see something new.
Yeah. Anyway. So, again.
And normally, it revolves around personalities. The things that I see, the newest things I always see, are involving inheritances.
What do you see new in inheritance? That's everything's the same thing.
It's just the types of fights that take place in the
it's amazing the kind of fighting that happens without the proper planned
normally with quite a bit of wealth.
You know, before we go back to start taking some calls here on this point, Pat, if you are listening and haven't had your estate looked at lately or haven't thought about it, you probably should. I was just thinking, even my own self, just yesterday, I was there because it's about every 5 years I update our trust. And, you know, things change. The kids get older. The circumstances change. Even for myself, my views on some things change.
Yeah.
Before, the kids were going to get a little bit. Now they're not getting a dime. Not a dime.
No.
I'm just kidding.
And that could change next week, depending upon how he does on his geometry test.
Yeah, I'm joking.
You know what? That's a good point. So last time I looked at my trust, I realized my youngest child wasn't even named in it. And that's why I redid my trust last time, is that I needed to.
And if you have minor children, it's really important that you've got... who's listed as the guardian?
So, anyway,
and you'll find if you've been listening to the show for years, you'll see how we just kind of go down different trails depending on what's
on. While you're a listener of the show, our entertainment is foremost.
Yes. Anyway, so let's go to the calls. We'll talk to Mario. Mario, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes.
Hi, Mario. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, I actually have a couple of questions. Right now, I've been considering doing some upgrades to my house, doing some just putting some stuff in that my wife has been wanting me to put in, like flooring and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
and we're also looking at, you know, solar panels and, you know, for electricity and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And we are certainly cash wise, we certainly don't have the cash. We do have good equity in our house. Basically, we have our house is it's on a 15-year loan. We owe about $160,000 on it, and it's probably worth around maybe $500,000.
Okay.
And so my thought was that, well, maybe this might be a good opportunity to refinance and get some money out and take advantage of the...
Mario, what's the interest rate on the home?
The loan that I have right now?
Yeah, the home
It's 3.75.
Okay, and how old are you, Mario?
I'm 54.
And when do you plan on retiring?
Well, that was part of my second question also. I could, in about 2.5 years, I'll be facing the decision on whether to retire or do I want to stick around a little bit longer, 3 more years or so. The main difference in that would be that if I wait 3 more years, certainly I would get maybe like about $1,000 more per month in my retirement. If I don't, it'll be basically $1,000 less.
Okay.
But the thing is that by retiring, say, in about 2.5 years, I would still be bringing in more money that I'm bringing in now. In
Got it. From, so I'm going to guess that you work for the state or municipality.
Yes, I do.
And so that you are become pension eligible, probably because of years of service in the next 2.5 years. Is that correct?
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. So that's a completely different question altogether.
Right.
One of the things is how much.
But it's
kind of tied together.
Yeah, because
the question of whether you retire in 2.5 years or 5 years. There's a lot of factors.
So what if you pulled out the cash you needed for the remodel, got the flooring and all that stuff, whatever you needed to do, and had a 30-year mortgage on this instead of a 15-year mortgage?
Why would he do that?
Well, because he's going to be retiring. He's retiring at 55. He's going to have a reduced cash flow for the next 15 years in presumably his younger, healthier years of retirement.
So you say you're going to retire in the next 5 years. It's not necessarily two and a half.
Actually, my cash flow would be a little bit higher.
In retirement?
In retirement, yes.
Because you're putting money into your
pension.
457 and 401k?
Let's say in 2.5 years when I retire, I get about, 90% of my salary.
Okay.
Now,
are you eligible for Social Security?
I would be at some.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how much money do you have in your 457 or 401k?
Altogether, I'd say close to about $400,000.
Okay,
but his pension's going to be more than his.
Yeah, correct.
Now.
I get it.
So I would
Why even a 30-year? Why wouldn't you do a 15-year? It doesn't really matter, does it?
Doesn't matter.
And how long do you plan on being in the house?
Depends if he does the remodel.
Probably at least another 8 to 10 years.
So here's one of the things I would look at. I would separate the solar from the rest of the remodel.
Uh-huh.
And I would then make that decision in and of itself based on whether you want it to be financed by someone else and you give away the tax deduction. The deduction is not yours. Whether you want to pay cash for it, whether you want to finance it, or whether you want to put it on your property tax bill. Which actually may be the way to go in this situation. So the solar financing is something completely different than the rest of the remodel.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know whether it would add value, resale value to the home or not. And that's why you might want to put it on the tax bill. So separate that. And actually, and I'm in Scott's camp. I don't think it matters whether you do a 15-year or 30-year.
I'd probably do if I were at your stage, knowing I've got this fat pension that's going to last me to my dying day, I'd probably say, what's the rush in getting the mortgage paid off?
And especially since you don't have any money outside of tax-deferred vehicles, you're not going to pay this mortgage off anytime soon. I agree with Scott. I'd go with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage and wouldn't worry too much about it. When you go to retire...
And he's going to be there 8 or 10 years. He's going to do something different. And
that's what he thinks, but 8 and 10 years is a long ways away. When you go to retire, then... In 2.5 years, question whether it makes sense to stay on payroll for another year, year and a half, 2 years. Part of it is whether your spouse retires or not. Is your wife retiring at the same time?
Well, my wife will not. She would have to wait at least another 7 or 8 years.
So that might be one of the reasons you decide to work a couple years longer. It is normally not good for a relationship if two people have been working together, if they're working for, I'm just telling you.
Retiring, when I'm saying retiring,
you
I'm
mean
talking about just withdrawing, collecting my pension, and then
You're not retiring.
I can start a different career because
there we go.
My skills are that I can be self-employed. Actually,
good. I would really recommend doing a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah.
And then you have the flexibility to pay
more. I disagree.
Not
50. Do a 30-year or 15-year. It doesn't matter. It doesn't make any difference.
You're gonna retire. You're gonna have the same. You're gonna have more income than you've got now, and you're probably gonna get another job.
And then you're gonna pay it down. Yeah, I agree with Scott. So I appreciate.
If you valued what that pension was, if you actually took the time and say, "How much is that pension? It's worth
millions.
Millions. Yes,
millions.
It's worth a lot of money. So. Millions. Hey, appreciate the call, Mario. Hope this was helpful for you. And we're taking a quick break. If you want to be part of the program to join the show, it's 888-2-HANSON. Again, 888-2-HANSON. That'll get you onto the program. I'd love to take your call. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. You can learn more about us by going to moneymatters.com. We'll be right back.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean have been airing Hanson McLean's Money Matters for nearly 20 years. The straightforward, common sense advice you hear each weekend is the same sort of advice you'll receive when you work with their advisory firm, Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean Advisors is a distinctive investment advisory firm in that it specializes with people preparing for and transitioning into retirement. The current economic environment has made it more difficult for many people to become retirement ready. Furthermore, with people living healthier, longer lives today, many folks view retirement much differently than their parents did. They want to stay active and engaged, and some don't want to ever fully retire. Hanson McLean understands that every individual is unique, and that is why they tailor their financial advice to the specific needs of each client they serve. Hanson McLean's credentialed advisors take the time to listen to their clients before they make any recommendations. And Hanson McLean's independent fiduciary model can give you confidence knowing your retirement dollars are invested properly for you. To get your retirement on track, contact them today by calling 1-888-2-HANSON or visiting their website at HansonMcLean.com. That's Hanson McLean.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. On this fantastic week. Every weekend's fantastic, I guess, for that matter. You know, it's weekend.
Is that right?
Huh?
Is that right?
What do you mean? Most people enjoy the weekends.
I think so. Some people work the weekends.
As we do.
Oh, that's a good point.
This is really hard work, you know, coming in.
Oh, yeah. Talking on this microphone.
Not quite like trimming trees when I was a young man.
Yeah. When I was in college, I worked almost every weekend. I was a waiter, so I worked Friday and Sunday nights. Normally not Saturdays.
So, hey, real quick before we go back to this.
Reminiscing.
We're going to talk some about retirement plans. So my daughter coming home for the summer from college. In high school, so she was finished her freshman year. In high school, she wanted to paint her bedroom. And so...
She wanted to paint her bedroom?
Oh, yes.
Something other than...
In high school.
Something other than the way you had it painted.
Yes, of course. And so she picked out, it was like this... I called it a handicap blue because it was like, and nothing disrespectful.
Oh, because of the color.
The color, when you think of a handicap placard, that was the color
like
of the
bright
room.
Blue.
So I thought it might be a nice thing for father and daughter to, and I'm just not that good with my hands, right? So we decide to paint her room.
Together?
Together.
Okay.
I think we spent 3 days.
Really?
At least over some hours and 3 days.
Like a contractor could have knocked it out in an hour.
Okay, hold on a second, right?
Did I ruin the story?
And then there's like this wainscoting wood thing in the middle that you had to get the straight line. I couldn't finish it. I had to call someone. I couldn't get the line straight. It looked horrible because they had the white and they get the blue and the white line.
Okay.
So I finally called some painter. He was out of there in no time. It looked great. So anyway, she's been at college and she... her room, after we ripped down all the rock posters, it's this blue with all these white dots from where the posters ripped off the wall. So we decided to paint it. And she said, last time she was up visiting, hey, Dad, why don't we go and paint my room again? And I thought, oh. So my point is, on Thursday of this week, Friday, we had a painter come out. The guy looked at the room and the bathroom, bought the paint, painted the room, and the bathroom was done by 3 o'clock.
And done.
And it looked fantastic. It was like $400 all in. I mean,
and you
was,
would have and you would have spent hours.
Oh.
Okay, so what's the, I don't understand how this pertains to this radio show.
We were talking about work and all of a sudden I started about painful experiences.
Got it.
I think for me, painting.
Okay.
It's got to be. It's one of those things that I've most definitely am I going to hire.
So your point being is.
Well, actually, let me tie this back into financial advising. So the way I painted is similar to the way a lot of people deal with their finances.
All right.
And their investments and their financial planning. And sometimes if they go to a professional, if they hire that professional, could make it relatively easy.
Assuming they have a good professional.
And relatively inexpensive.
Assuming they have a good professional.
How's that for a tie-in?
That was long and painful.
Personal life painful.
That was a long way to go to get to a point. That was a long, long way
to get to a
point.
I didn't even know what point I was going to get to. I was trying to wrap it in.
Nice.
Good, put the right
good job.
Spin on
things. So what I'd like to talk about is actually this email.
All right.
And then we'll go from there. We'll see if this is pertinent.
Right, 'cause I want to talk about some retirement plan stuff that's been in the news.
I think this kind of works in.
All right.
I'm 48 years old and a superintendent of a small district. You are? In STRS, State Teacher Retirement.
You are.
This person, his name is Kevin. He maxes out his...
Are you reading an email from Kevin? Is that
what
this
is? Yeah, but not verbatim. I'm just getting the high
points. Kevin's 48 years old.
He puts money into his... he's in STRS, Cal STRS, State Teacher Retirement. He maxes out his 403B, his tax savings vehicle, at $17,500 a year. Two separate vendors at statewide conferences. Boondoggles.
Boondoggles.
Junkets. And a CBO, which I don't know what that is.
I thought you were going to take the email and put it into the pertinent information instead of
reading
stuff.
Okay, basically...
He wants to know if he can
put money into a 403B and 457 for a total of $35,000 because two other people have told him he could. It's a great question.
So you're under age 50. You're limited to $17,500 to put in your retirement account, right? So most of us at work, unless you're unfortunate enough to have a top heavy plan, which you can put in less. So $17,500. He works for a municipality that offers both. You're a state worker. Many municipalities offer you both. A 401k and a 457 plan.
So his question is, he was told by some people.
This guy has a 403b
and
a 457.
He actually may have a 457. We don't know that.
It says right here. A 457. What
no.
do you mean we don't know?
No, it doesn't.
The point is, you can contribute if you have a 401k or a 401k. You can contribute to both that. And the 457, it's a strange wrinkle in the law. And sometimes people say, well, what the heck's the difference between these? Think of it this way. A 401k is and a 403b, quite similar, actually. They are plans that are established by your employer, whereby, as an employee, you receive an income, and you choose to then take that paycheck and direct that paycheck, a portion of that paycheck, to go into a retirement plan. In a 401k, your employer is the one who sets up a separate trust for it. And a 403B, you're the one who sets up essentially a separate kind of trust for it. So you receive the paycheck. You just tell your employer, don't send it to me. Send it to this place. And by doing so, you receive a tax break. A 457 deferred compensation plan, these are set up through municipalities, state governments. These are what's known as a deferred compensation plan. Now, it's a technicality, but it's essentially in saying, wait a minute, you say, don't give me that pay. I don't even want that on my paycheck. Don't give me that pay. I'm going to defer that pay to the future.
I'm going to pretend like I never even earned it, and you just keep it, Mr. Employer, and give it to me sometime in the future.
And so that's what a 457 plan
is. And it remains both an asset and a liability for
the employer.
The employer.
So if you work for the state of California, as an example, and you've got money in the 457, technically that 457 could be subject to creditors of the state of California.
I wouldn't spend a lot of time worrying. So back to Kevin's question is, yes, if you have both a 403B and a 457 plan available to you, then you can make the contribution to the max to
Which
both.
Which is crazy.
Of course it's crazy, but it's the rules. If you work for a private corporation, let's call it XYZ Corporation, you would not have that benefit. No. Although if you were an executive...
I don't know how many teachers can do both this. Oh, he's a superintendent of a small district.
That's why. Most teachers don't have it available to you, but many administrators do.
And by the way,
although his district may not have a deferred compensation plan in place.
Maybe he wants to put one in.
He's the superintendent. He actually might be able to make that call.
From a financial planning standpoint, by the way, if you're a teacher, your last year or two, get into the superintendent's job.
It might make sense.
It would be very...
At least actually, under the current rules.
If you actually calculate the value, that would be an increase in your pension, put it in a net present value, looked at that, and you've calculated
what... But he stirs, not purrs.
What's the difference?
Some administrators are in PERS and some are
okay,
in CERS.
Whatever. I'm just saying the value of increased in pension.
Yes.
By going into management your last couple of years can make a tremendous impact.
So let's talk a little bit more about pension plans, right? So this is a question that Kevin asked. The other question is, if you have a 401k, 403b, 457 available to you, especially on the 401k, does it make sense to put money in Roth, the Roth version, or... the non-Roth version.
Yeah, and there, Pat, there was the Roth version of the 401k came out a number of years ago, and the majority of 401k plans offer a Roth option, the Roth 401k. But last I looked, it was less than 10% of contributions are going into the Roth 401k. And here's where I think there's an issue. Matter of fact, there's been some talk in the news the last few months. The Department of Labor has put in a proposal to state that any investment advice on a retirement plan, whether 401k or an IRA, the advisor needs to act as a fiduciary, put the interest first, which they should be doing anyway. And it'll change the way a lot of these brokers work with retirement accounts. It won't change firms like ours, registered investment advisors, because we already act as fiduciaries. But so there's been a lot of this talk about it. And I was thinking about this, Pat. It's like, 60-some-odd percent of Americans are in a 15% federal tax bracket or lower. Almost half of Americans.
What percentage?
I think it was 60. Last I read, 64, 66%, okay. Somewhere in there. At roughly two-thirds of Americans are in a 15% tax bracket or lower. Mm-hmm. Almost half Americans pay no income taxes. So, but these people are contributing on the 401k on a before-tax basis. So they're having money going to a retirement account in times when they're maybe paying no income tax, or if they're paying income tax at a very low rate, it's growing tax deferred. If they do a good job savings, there's a good chance they'll be in a higher tax bracket at retirement time.
So this would be perfect if, so let's say you're just starting your career and you're in your mid-20s. I'm thinking of nephews and nieces.
I'm just making, and anyone, my blanket statement here, and I normally don't make those, but anyone who is in a 15% federal tax bracket or lower
should be putting into
should
a Roth
use a Roth and not the before tax. Now, if the 401k contribution is lowering your taxable income so that you're no longer in a 25% bracket but now in a 15%, then you wouldn't want to switch over to the Roth. But if you are clearly, particularly, you take someone who's earlier in
so
the career, couple kids.
Scott, I'm listening to this conversation. And it is so stinking complicated to decide what to do for the average American.
That's why I just gave a blanket statement. Most Americans don't know what tax bracket they're in either, for that matter.
Correct. So how would you say it? If you had income of under $40,000 a year, would you put money into a Roth or not?
Roth, 100%. If you're single and it's under 50, if you're married and your income's under 90.
You put money in a Roth.
Because by the time you add your personal exemption.
Now, that makes sense. That's something that someone could walk away with. If you're single and you make less than $50,000 a year, put money into a Roth. If you're married and you make less than $90,000 a year, put money into a Roth.
Yes.
That's a blanket statement that means something.
And it could be, your income could be much more than that. If you have three kids at home and itemized deductions that are large, it could be much, much
We're
higher.
We're going to have
that.
To make more blanket statements in order to get to the right answer.
So, I mean, but part of the point there is there's a lot of discussion right now from the Department of Labor about making sure employers are given the right kind of options in their 401k, making sure there's low cost options. And to me, they're ignoring one of the it's
glaring.
It's glaring that there are millions of Americans taking advantage of a tax break when they're at the lowest taxable tax bracket there is. Taxes are not going to go lower for them.
So the Department of Labor may be focusing on the wrong thing.
They may be focused on the right thing, but well, I think this is a bigger, my opinion, this is a bigger issue.
Well, cost and fiduciary is really important for all investors.
No question about it.
All investors.
Low cost and fiduciary.
And fiduciary is important for all investors. But at the same time, a tax strategy that is relevant to your situation is just as important.
And having said that, if you are a resident of California, state of California, and your plan is to retire in another state, maybe Nevada or Texas, where there's no income taxes.
Or lower income taxes.
What we just said may or may not make the most sense, because if you're sitting right now and you know that in 2 years from now you're going to be in a state without any income taxes, you might want to take the tax break of the pre-tax thing ahead of time. So anyway, we are getting short on time. Hey, want to make mention of our website, moneymatters.com. You know, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters here on the radio, and we've got a continuation of our radio program right online, moneymatters.com. At that website, you can download our 7 personal decision points for retirement transition. There's that there. There's some other great things there. Money Matters University, where there's lots of great articles on a variety of different financial topics. If you haven't been to moneymatters.com in a while, you really owe it to yourself to go
there. Get right there.
Anyway, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 888-2-HANSON to join the program. We'll be right back.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, started their investment advisory firm, Hanson McLean Advisors, some 20 years ago with the idea of providing honest, transparent financial advice. From humble beginning with a small staff, today, Hanson McLean is one of the largest independent advisory firms in the country with a team of advisors in offices in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. The same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean is first to listen to you and then come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that pick from a wide variety of financial products to best suit your needs. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at HansonMcLean.com. That's HansonMcLean.com.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us. Second half hour of the program. Is that the right
thing? And normally, the best half hour.
The second is?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? You getting warmed up? Feeling better about yourself?
I'm almost.
Your self-confidence is a little greater?
I'm almost.
Insecurities have gone.
Almost.
The nerves are no longer there.
I'm almost done.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right.
You know, then I get to leave. Back to my,
and then you could just be a participant in talk show by being a listener and not yeah. and
I'm
going, being so active. I am participating.
I am in quite the hurry to get back to my mundane life.
Was that right?
Yes, watching my favorite show, Idol Americans, and The Voice.
Give me a break.
No, I know.
Yeah. Anyway, let's take a call here. 888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Eric. Eric, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi, Eric.
Hey, about 3 years ago, my mother-in-law passed away, and the condo she owned went into trust. The siblings are now looking to find out what to do with the condo, and they really have no idea what the tax consequences are.
Got it.
Or anything like that.
What happened to the other assets? Was it just were they distributed when she passed away a couple years ago, or?
Yes, they were.
Okay, and this is the remaining asset.
It is, yeah.
And what was the value of the condo when you inherited the dollars, when your wife inherited the dollars?
I don't know that we ever actually looked at that. She purchased it for $61,000, and it's currently worth about $115,000.
She purchased it. Your mother-in-law purchased it.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll walk you through the tax implications on this.
Now, was she married when she purchased the condo, or?
No.
Okay,
no.
So because here's what happens. Sometimes there's a bypass trust. Sometimes people inherit assets when the second parent passes away, and there's a bypass trust or a B trust or a credit provisionary trust, different names for them. But when that occurs, sometimes you don't get the same stepped up basis for taxes. But that's not going to apply to you. So the only reason that's kind of just stating that, because other listeners out there, if there is, if you inherit assets and some's in a revocable trust and others were in a credit bypass trust, provisionary trust, B trust,
you probably need the help of an attorney and a qualified accountant at that point in time. We are not, we are neither attorneys nor accountants.
We know how the stuff works, but
yeah, we're not allowed to give we're not allowed to give legal advice.
Well, not if you're not an attorney. Attorneys will certainly tell you that.
Yeah, the attorneys have got a lock on the legal advice.
I remember one time this attorney says, you know, you broached on legal advice. I said, well, from your perspective, you want to give me that legal opinion? I guess that we all give legal advice, according to this person's viewpoint.
Yes. So,
in any case.
Now that we've established we're not attorneys and we're happy for that, Eric, the answer to your question is there may be some capital gains due on the inheritance.
And it's not based upon what the mother-in-law purchased the condo for. It's what the condo was worth on the day she passed away.
And the difference between that date and now. So let's just say that on the date she died, the condo was worth $100,000. And today...
Where's this condo that is so low priced?
It's in Carmichael.
Okay.
Carmichael,
okay.
Sacramento.
So let's say on the day she died, it was worth $100,000. And today it's worth $150,000. Then there was gain of $50,000 since the date of death. And that $50,000 would be taxable as capital gains to each one of the beneficiaries of the trust. So minus any dollars that went into capital improvements, as well as
real estate commissions,
But you would have to recapture depreciation if, in fact, they were running a depreciation.
Were you renting this?
No, one of the siblings is living there.
Okay. Yeah. So you there would be capital gains.
It's going to be negligible split between the siblings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So how much? It just depends on what it went up in value, and you figure you're going to lose 20% to 25% of that value in a capital gains tax.
Okay.
Of only the difference of what it went up in.
Okay.
You follow?
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Good luck, Eric. And you know, I really when. Someone passed away, you need to get an appraisal for what the homes were.
And,
I guess on a $100,000 condo, they didn't bother. But
And it's actually, in this particular situation, is where one of the children that inherited the asset is actually living in it. I have oftentimes seen that turns out very, very badly.
Yeah.
Because they're receiving economic value from the inheritance and the other people that now own
the
asset.
How often do we see that?
Very
common.
Often. Very.
Sometimes there's a sibling.
Or a grandchild, normally.
Someone's living in the house. Sometimes you see someone living in the house. Grandpa, let's say it's grandma or mom passes away. After the kids receive the inheritance and one's still living in the house.
Yeah.
And the other is saying, you know, what kind of like my inheritance. So I've got other issues. I'd like to.
I own half that house and you're living in it right now. Actually, I'm working on one right now. That's very similar to this. A client, his brother was living in the house. The house was worth about $800,000, $900,000 in the San Francisco Bay Area. He inherited half the house. The only way to actually get at it is to try to get the brother to come to the table. And the brother doesn't, you know, he's living in the house. He's lived there for 20 years. It's working out just fine for the guy living in the house.
What's going to happen?
My recommendation was actually to take a reverse mortgage because they're both over the age of 62. And the son living in the inherited house has no assets, is to take a reverse mortgage and the proceeds from the reverse mortgage and buy his brother's portion out for
him. That's a great idea.
Well, thank you. Thank you. He can't get his brother that lives in the house to agree to it, though. So he's like, how far do you take this legal action?
I tell you,
Mom never, obviously never, no one ever talked about it before they died.
So mom leaves the house to her two sons.
And one of the sons has been living there for 20 years. He's a great guy. He just
I'm
got
sure
this.
Sort of, he's really he's stand up big.
No, I didn't say stand up. Oh, I said great guy. Fun to be around.
Really?
Oh, always ready to party. Hasn't worked in a long, long time.
Been living with mom since he was 40.
Yeah. I mean, it happens.
I know. A little odd.
Since he was, 20-some-odd years. But it would fix the problem if they took a, if he would agree to a reverse mortgage, put it in his own name. And the reason, the way you would do that, actually, I walked the coin through, is put a note on the house so that it, your brother owns it.
Obviously,
completely.
The person living in the house doesn't have the wherewithal to make mortgage payments if they took a normal mortgage.
That is correct.
So the house, let's say it's worth $800,000. The other guy, brother, says, wait a minute. You owe me $400,000 for this house. You've been living in it, and I want my money.
Correct. So
what's the point of me living in the house till the day we both die, and then I receive nothing? You receive everything, and that's and not how mom set up things.
The point being is that I said, okay, look, you can borrow X amount on a reverse mortgage. Your brother's going to accept a note for your portion of that house, and then you're going to do a reverse mortgage. It's just in his name, and they're going to pay you off.
So, and reverse mortgages,
they work.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
There are times when it's an absolute disaster. I'll never forget talking with one couple. He was 62. She was 56. They wanted the reverse mortgage. They retired early. She removed her name from title so they could get the money.
Wow.
And I really counseled them against it. I said, the challenge is...
what happens if he dies? Then she no longer
has...
When
he dies. Now, 9 times out of 10, the man goes before the woman.
Yeah.
And he's older. So statistically speaking... it's almost a sure thing she's going to be widowed. And then if she's not on the
title.
Did
she lose the house?
I don't know what happened. I mean,
the reason is that both people have to be on title of the house in a reverse mortgage. And if you take someone off title of the house, means they no longer have economic interest in the house.
But
so reverse mortgages, they're like many other financial planning tools. They're not inherently good or bad. They're either appropriate or inappropriate. When I say that, there are some things that we're not fans of. Most annuities and non-traded real estate investment trust.
Yeah, but the reverse mortgage to the right kind of situation and something like that. But it is if you've got one of your kids living in your residence now and you think they will be and you plan on having this home go amongst the kids. You better do some planning now and have it spelled out exactly what should happen in your will or your trust. Otherwise, you're going to create more problems for your kids when you pass on. And
you may want that. If you think about it.
You never want that. You want your kids all get along, sing kumbaya together and everything.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Anyway, we're taking a quick break. To join us, the number to reach the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. You could also go to our website and send us an email at questions@moneymatters.com. Again, our website is moneymatters.com. And we'd love to take your call, answer your question. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors. And we can sit and chat all day about stuff on our mind, or we can take your calls. It's really your choice.
It's up to you. The show is in your hands.
Anyway, this is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean have been airing Hanson McLean's Money Matters for nearly 20 years. The straightforward, common sense advice you hear each weekend is the same sort of advice you'll receive when you work with their advisory firm, Hanson McLean. Hanson McLean Advisors is a distinctive investment advisory firm in that it specializes with people preparing for and transitioning into retirement. The current economic environment has made it more difficult for many people to become retirement ready. Furthermore, with people living healthier, longer lives today, many folks view retirement much differently than their parents did. They want to stay active and engaged, and some don't want to ever fully retire. Hanson McLean understands that every individual is unique, and that is why they tailor their financial advice to the specific needs of each client they serve. Hanson McLean's credentialed advisors take the time to listen to their clients before they make any recommendations, and Hanson McLean's independent fiduciary model can give you confidence knowing your retirement dollars are invested properly for you. To get your retirement on track, contact them today by calling 1-888-2-HANSON or visiting their website at HansonMcLean.com. That's Hanson McLean.
You win, it's your show now, so what's it gonna
Welcome
be?
Back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us on this great weekend as we talk about financial matters. 888-2-HANSON to join the program. And
so, right in the middle of graduation season.
It is.
My daughter, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Lots of functions. And
it's earlier and earlier every year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I only had one. Well, to get out of school earlier and earlier.
Which, but
the problem is that she's a senior and she's graduating.
Senior in high school.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very, very difficult to get her to engage in this thing called education at this point in time.
Oh, senioritis. She didn't.
You get in a room at 9:30. You go, shouldn't you be at school?
Yeah.
She says, yeah, I should.
9:30 in the morning?
Yeah. Shouldn't you be at school, honey? Yes, I should, Dad.
Well, is she 18?
Yes.
Can she like write her own notes or whatever?
She goes to a private school, so no. She could. I mean, she could do anything she wants. She's 18.
Hence why it's 9:30 and she's sitting in her room.
But she's smart enough to know that.
Is this a common thing that she's sitting in her room at 9:30 in the morning?
Has it been? No, this is a relatively new, recent occurrence. But I'll say, well, shouldn't you go to school? Yes, I should. Why aren't you? I don't care. I'm done with this. We're not quite done.
Something tells me her
done.
Father was probably a similar kind of student in high school.
Me?
I'm just guessing.
Me?
She actually does. I just have a feeling.
She does have a lot of my personality.
I remember my
sleep.
Senior year in high school, I a lot of these seniors, the way it works now, a lot of kids, by the time they're senior, they're able to have enough credits so they can be done by lunchtime. Wasn't really like that when I was in high school, but I managed to take this gardening class.
That's not really a class.
Well, that's why, let me tell you about it. So one of the school counselor guys lived down the street from me. And
counselor in quotes. You can't, this is radio, but you give me the quotes,
counselor.
The air quotes.
Well, yeah, you know, high school counselor. And so there was this gardening class, and there's this tiny plot of land on the school that had a fence around it for a garden. And so I got like three credit, whatever the units were, I forget what they were, but it enabled me to sign up for this. I could leave at lunchtime. I didn't have to come back after lunch. And I think I only went to that garden once the entire year. Got rid of the weeds one time.
You got some Roundup?
Yeah. I don't know what I did.
Yeah,
based
on how well your yard looks today, I think it's paid off, Scott.
The gardening class. I think it was one of those classes for kids that like, they could tell like, you're emotionally just getting so checked out that.
Yeah. No, but you've done a beautiful job.
I was one of those, they just pushed me through the system.
You've done a beautiful job with your yard.
Oh, give me a break. So I certainly understand when it's right. This is the time right now. This within the couple weeks left or a couple of days
left. Was that your sophomore year or your senior year, this gardening class?
This is my senior year.
I'm just checking.
Although I had a couple other things like that. I kind of worked the system in high school.
Did you a little bit?
Yeah, I wasn't the best high school student.
No. My daughter actually is a very good student. She was up until the last 3 or 4 weeks has been an excellent student.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's enough about us.
Let's hear what you have to say about us. Yes. All right, Mike, thanks for joining Hanson McLean. What can we do for you?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Talked to you about 7 years ago, and you answered my question for me. At that time, it was whether I should start buying airtime or not, and I was about 2 years away from retirement, so I did buy airtime. That was a great call.
Well, thank you. And did we not tell you 7 years ago that we could not believe that they even offer such a thing, and at some point in time, they would probably stop it? Did we say that?
You did, and they're still offering.
No, they quit offering it.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, you cannot, unless you had already signed up for airtime and started the payment program. Yeah.
This is for state employees or teachers, too. For that
where you could buy 5 years of pension. They have stopped offering it.
Well, see, I've been out for 5 years, so I've been out of the loop.
Okay. So what is your question for us?
I did buy my 5 years, so I'm good.
Good for you.
So now my next question is, when should I start taking Social Security? I'm going to be 57 this summer, so I'm wondering, should I take it early? Should I wait midway through when I can take it, or should I wait all the way till?
Are you married?
I am married, no kids.
How old's your wife?
She is 40.
40?
So.
Interesting. She works outside the home, I take it?
She does not.
Okay, she does.
Yeah, she does. Well, she owns her own business outside the home.
Got it. And you said you're 67.
No, I'm 50.
No, fit, no.
You're 57.
Making him older.
So what? You're so far away from Social Security.
He's still 5 years. He's trying to plan ahead.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. I get that. The problem I have answering the question is I know what I would tell you to do now. I don't know what I would tell you to do 5 years from now because the rules will be different. I can almost guarantee you the rules will be different.
Yeah, I mean, now there's some strategies where we might say, "What? Let's wait till age 66
for your full retirement age, and then file and suspend."
Yeah, but with the spouse such a different age,
I don't think the spouse would come into play here.
No,
the earliest you can take it is 62. Is that right?
Yeah, the earliest you can take it is at 62, but it may not. So there's a lot of things that would drive the answer to this question. One would be the health, your health at the time, right? And if you were in poor health, I'd have you take it as soon as possible. If you were in great health and you have a long, your family has a history of longevity, I would probably have you wait until you were 66.
What's your annual income?
It's about $12,000 a month, so $140,000 a year.
Yeah. So here's the challenge with Social Security. There's calculators you can go out and it'll show you for every year you wait beyond age 62, your earliest you can receive it, the benefit increases about 8% a year. And I've had some people say, "Well, it's a guaranteed 8% increase." Well, not quite, because if you wait from 62 to 63, that's 1 year that you could have received benefits, right? And if you wait till all the way to age 70, that's 8 years you could have received benefits. And hypothetically, you could have taken those benefits, saved and invested them elsewhere, et cetera. So if you knew for certainty you were going to live to beyond age 87, then would say take it at age 70. But you don't, number one, you don't know that for certain. And number two, I'm going to turn your mic up because you're a little loud here, so hold on here. Number two on this, the challenge is we don't know what's going to happen with Social Security going forward, because here we just had in the last few weeks, Governor Chris Christie out of New Jersey, he came out and said, "I think Social Security should be means-tested, needs-based, and for those retirees that have large incomes and don't have a big need."
Which he said 200,000, he said that there's a possibility that you should lose benefits. And I had nothing to do with the bridge scandal. He said both those things.
That was unfortunate, knew nothing of it.
But let's talk about Social Security. Head fake.
So that was from Republican Chris Christie. Last fall, opinion piece in Wall Street Journal from a Republican senator, state senator from Oregon, stated, Social Security needs to be means tested. And so here's why I'm bringing these two Republicans.
We've got family income of $144,000.
And when you've got Republicans starting to state this, that even though you've contributed, Republicans are saying maybe you don't need it. Our belief is that
Wait, are you implying that the Republicans are representing the wealthy class?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent work there, Scott.
Our belief is at some point in the future, there will be some reduction of benefits on Social Security. And our belief is, we don't know for sure, but our belief is they will probably reduce benefits on the very wealthy first.
Well, they've already started taxing it years ago.
Here's how, if you look at the history of the taxation.
So what we're saying, okay, Mike, for Mike's question, which is, does it make sense to take it now? Talk a little bit about the history. We don't know this until he goes to apply. It depends on what the political environment looks like at that time.
Odds are, why don't you do this? Call us back when you're 61 and a half and we'll go through the things again. Because it's still time off. But Social Security used to be tax-free. Then back in the 80s, they started taxing 50% of the benefits. And the reason they use 50% is they say, well, the employer pays half of the payroll tax, and they get the tax deduction for it. But the employee, when they pay it, they haven't received the tax deduction. So they said half hasn't really been taxed, so it's fair for us to tax half.
Income's over $32,000 for families and $25,000 for an individual.
Yeah, provisional income, which is a whole other formula to calculate that. Suffice it to say, the majority of retirees on Social Security today don't pay any income tax on it. But then in the 90s, they started taxing Social Security even greater. So now up to 85% of your benefits can be taxable. Again, if you're a low income, retiree living on Social Security, you pay no income taxes. If you're high income receiving Social Security, you pay income taxes. What happens when you pay income taxes? You receive the money and then you turn around and give it right back, right? That's how it
works. Well, to a different part of the government, but kind of the same concept.
Oh, come on. That's all the same thing, right? You're giving it back. So if we look what's happened with Medicare Part B for retirees, not everyone pays the same amount. When your income exceeds, I think it's somewhere around $180,000, joint retiree, you start paying a lot more in Medicare tax. And the higher your income goes up and retiring, the more you pay for your Medicare. So you're paying a whole lot more if you're a wealthy retiree. So they've already done this by increasing taxes twice and increasing Medicare.
It leads us to believe at some point in time they're going to tax 100% of Social Security. And then at some point in time, it's going to be needs tested.
So kind of a general rule of thumb from us on Social Security. If you have plenty of income and plenty of assets and you don't need, again, you don't need Social Security, take it as early as you can.
Because it is more likely if you don't need it that the government will be able to identify you as someone as not needing it. And then therefore not giving it to you.
It's certainly within the realms of possibilities.
I would take it as early as I could.
The second thing, if you are someone that will need Social Security, you have modest income, modest assets, and you will absolutely need that income, you want to defer that as long as possible, maybe till age 70.
Because it will make up a larger portion of your retirement income.
And so
if not 100%.
A lot of Americans should wait at least till their normal retirement age, if not longer, and continue in some work. So anyway, that's our answer to that. Appreciate
we've got to wrap
there.
It up. Go to our website, moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com, and you'll actually be able to read articles very similar to the conversation that we had.
Yeah, so you can join moneymatters.com. While you're at Money Matters, you can sign up for this podcast. We do this radio program every week. We are on KGO on Saturday afternoons, 4 to 6. And
4 to 5?
4 to 5, and on KFBK from 10 to 11, rebroadcast Sundays 2 to 3. So anyway, we're glad you guys joined us. We will look forward to seeing you next week. This has been Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McClain Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.